You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 8 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Mthethwa Tulari, commodities had a huge Thursday, although they've given some back overnight. Certainly the commodities have. We'll see how the stocks do. Mohammed Nile on the impending UK energy crisis, an unraveling story, a bit of a slow motion train wreck. Not sure how bad it'll get, but he lays out what the problem is and he lays out what the implication is. Maybe. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Government unveils a 595 billion rand pipeline of new infrastructure projects, with a funding gap of 441 billion for the 55 projects. They've got the plans, but they've only got about a quarter of the money. From CNBC, Senate passes short-term increase to debt limit, House to vote on it next. This basically kicks the can down to the 3rd of December, so it's a stopgap measure. Morning markets, the US was green overnight, S&P up 0.8%, NASDAQ up 0.9%, Asia green with Sydney up 0.8%, and Tokyo 2.2% higher. Commodities mixed, gold 1759. Brent, we saw a bit of relief, but it's now 8302, so oil is heading higher. Rand 1499. Top 40 opening call, about 110 points to the red, which is, what's that? It's about 0.15%. That is 10 centers off a third of a percent in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mthethwa Tulari, Head FX Execution at RMB. Mthethwa, appreciate the time. When we chatted last night on WhatsApp, you know, what should we chat about? It was commodities. They had a huge day. Palladium was back above 2,000. Oil had actually come down a bit. The miners were up 4% on the day for the index. A monster day. My question then was, is the sell-off over? Except now this morning we wake up and oil's at 83 and commodities are a little bit lower.
Good morning, Simon. And I suppose it's, you know, as you say, it's really a topsy-turvy kind of week and day yesterday, especially given the fact that it was a cracking day for the resources and PGMs in particular, obviously leading the JSE higher, you know, basically on good volume. But it was a really huge day for the PGMs. I mean, obviously, palladium was up like 5%. Rhodium was up 3.5% on news that Malaysia's chip production is improving. We saw the likes of Impala up close to 9%. The likes of Royal Bafokeng 8% up. You know, Anglo American 7% up. You know, Sibanye, Kumba Iron Ore. All those names were just, you know, it was just phenomenal. But the funny thing is that the coal stocks were the ones that were underperforming. Yeah. And I mean, it's quite, which is quite interesting because also when you just look at the coal price, there's been so much volatility in that market. And I mean, obviously, there has been a few of those producers who have been trying to hedge as and when it, you know, it creeps higher. I mean, over the past 2 weeks, we've seen it increase by like 55%. And I suppose it also speaks to the energy crunch that we have seen over the past couple of days. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, when you just look at some of the gold stocks, they've also been really solid. The likes of Harmony up 4%, Goldfields also 4.5% up. I mean, obviously, I think gold is really going to be steady. As we obviously have been weighing progress on the U.S. debt ceiling impasse, and obviously the risk, rising in inflation risks, whilst we also wait for, you know, this afternoon at 2:30 with the non-farm payrolls, which obviously will be really, you know, clearly watched for more clues on whether Jerome Powell and his friends at the Federal Reserve Bank with what's going to happen with regards to the monetary policy. And I suppose when you just look at the ADP now, numbers. I mean, that added what, 568,000 jobs. Mm-hmm. That's more than forecast by economists. So that could really point to a strong September for non-farm payrolls. But I suppose also, you know, as you said earlier, as much as crude is now climbing, it's also at least feeding through into the likes of Sasol and their balance sheet, and obviously that's also doing well for them. But I mean, yesterday Sasol didn't have a good day, down 3%. But nonetheless, you know, if you just look at crude, it's the world's most important raw material that is really being carried aloft by, you know, this whole global energy crunch. The higher the natural gas prices, they obviously breed additional demand, as you know, a lot of users started to switch. And obviously OPEC Plus so far not raising the pace at which they're going to be restoring output, and that crude gain is obviously stoking treasury yields. So these are some of the risks that we face. And the higher the oil price and the higher the gas price also gets, the more intense the push will be there from government. And you know, also what we're starting to see is potentially the US shale patch may yet raise its game, because whilst in China they could also be now releasing additional reserves. But you know, for the interim, I suppose, you know, backing gold does look like not such a bad idea, and also some of the PGM stocks.
Yeah, you mentioned that chip production improving in Malaysia. That's been the drag, right? So they can't produce chips, so they can't make cars, so they don't need our PGMs. That's what to watch. If that starts picking up, then PGMs are back to the races again.
100%. And I mean, already already some of the likes of Sibanya and all these other companies, obviously, mm-hmm. there's a lot that is being said around them. I mean, just a few weeks ago, you saw Neil Froman come out to say lithium is potentially now the new thing that and you know, if you've seen, you know, his track record, I mean, you know, Sibanya has been doing extremely well with the acquisitions that he's done with Stillwater, and obviously how they have performed. But you know, there is some also analysis in the market that says chip shortage recovery may not happen up until 2023. And obviously now that's going to factor into the auto industry. So that's also going to be, you know, quite interesting to see how this semiconductor chip shortage is going to play itself out. I mean, obviously, you know, we never thought that the world would be in a global energy crunch. I mean, we've been speaking about Eskom locally for so many years. And then now you've already got the situations out in China, Europe, and the US. And then obviously, now you overlay it with these supply chain issues and also the chip shortage.
We'll see how it unravels. People keep on saying to me, it'll all be sorted in 6 months, but they've been saying that for a year. Mateta Tulari, head FX execution at RMB, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Mohammed Nala, a good friend of the show. You find him, of course, at monos.com. Mohammed, appreciate your time again. This week, energy crisis, UK, Europe, I mean, even in northeastern China, they've got what we would call load shedding. Partly it's trucks and petrol in UK service stations, but actually it's a lot wider than that, and it's a lot wider than just the UK. It is also in Europe.
Yeah, I think, Simon, thanks for having me on the show. Always a pleasure. You know, love chatting to you and to the listeners as well. This energy crisis, some would say a long time coming, mm-hmm. And others would say it kind of crept up on us. And the fact of the matter is, when you've seen natural gas prices literally jump from first quarter of this year around, call it $2.40, to earlier this morning, call it $6.40, that is a massive, massive shock to the system. And I've seen a lot of narrative out there, some people saying, oh, well, this is related to, you know, a broader push for green in Europe, and that's the problem. And some people saying, well, that's absolute rubbish. Net zero is not the problem. It's COVID that's the problem. Others are saying it's geopolitics. So I'd like to unpack a whole bunch of all of those factors, because the fact of the matter is that it's probably a little bit of each of those.
Yeah, because that's just it. I went down the rabbit hole, and some people were blaming the Danes for having no wind, so there was no green power. Others were blaming COVID for not doing maintenance on storage last year, so it was done this year, so they never sort of got enough storage into it. Let's start with that net neutral.
Yeah, so let's start with net neutral, because I think, you know, it's fairly contentious to some who still support the fossil fuel industries. Mm-hmm. We know that in the UK, there has been a big push towards clean energy. And I don't think that's the problem. What I think the problem is that the UK pushed towards a single type of clean energy, and that was wind. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, when the wind stops blowing, you end up having problems. But this goes a step further, because if we actually delve into some of the energy dynamics in the UK, I actually saw a very interesting thread on Twitter this morning from an energy expert. So I can't claim credit for this. But effectively, this guy was saying that the UK has used gas to balance out the inconsistencies in the energy demand that is rather seasonal in the UK. And that spread in terms of energy demand is almost 2 to 3 times. Now, you can understand that. Whoa. It gets fairly cold out in the UK. People need to heat their homes. And so demand in the colder months can reach as high as 2 to 3 times what it is in the summer months. Now, here's the scary thing, Simon, is we're not in the winter months yet.
No, I know.
So there is an aspect of a demand dislocation. But if we superimpose on that some of the other aspects, if we superimpose on that the fact that COVID has constrained supply chains, not just in the UK, but globally. And, you know, I've got fantastic anecdotal stories I can tell you in the US where there's supply chain shortages impacting business there.
Yeah.
But there's some of that. There's the fact that there is a labor shortage. Again, post-pandemic, people have been slow to go back into work. And that is now complicating the moving of energy across the UK. There's shortage of truck drivers. We've heard stories of soldiers driving fuel trucks there. So it's a combination of that. And then last but not least, it's also geopolitics. You know, there's lots of talks around Russia turning off the taps. It's also the Brexit story. And here's where I think there's actually a lot of merit to this argument, is Europe is now, or the UK rather, has isolated itself from Europe. And Europe has a very nice balancing mechanism in its energy markets, in that when you get surpluses in some regions, so when the wind stops blowing in the UK historically, you'd be able to utilize the energy surplus that comes through the rest of the EU and push that onto the UK. Mm-hmm, the UK now is literally an island unto itself. And that undoubtedly is having a material impact in some of what we're seeing right now.
So this is, I mean, in essence, it's a combination of events that almost each on their own is not going to be a challenge. Collectively, they become a significant problem.
Yeah, and it talks to, there's an old concept around Minsky. Hyman Minsky was someone who had actually spoken about the fact that the longer stability continues actually leads to these veins of instability that creep up on you, yeah, and eventually the entire sand pile comes crashing down. And that's really this confluence of events that we're seeing in the UK. Now, what's really concerning me, Simon, is that the lead times on energy, for example, are exceptionally long. It takes a long time to build up capacity. It takes a long time. And here's the main rub, and it's why it's always so fascinating, because when you sit in an emerging market, you seem to think that these problems are just the purview of emerging markets. But in the UK, their energy regulator warned them that they may be facing shortages and constraints on their system in and around March of this year. And that's the reason why earlier I was saying in March, natural gas prices were around $2.50. It's now almost 3 times that. So it's a failure in that the authorities did not pay attention to their own warnings. They did not plan accordingly. They do not have nearly enough storage, which is the other constraint on their gas system, is that they just don't have the storage. So they can't really ride through some of these demand dislocations. And that's when the confluence of events comes back and bites you very, very severely.
And implications of this. I mean, there's the three obvious ones. I mean, there's going to be the tragic one. There are going to be some people who literally can't heat their homes over Christmas because of costs, and we might see some fatalities related to that. There's consumer who's going to have less disposable income because they're paying more in energy. And I've also heard that some of the European fertilizer manufacturers, because of the increased cost in energy, cutting back on fertilizer, that's going to impact into food. It suddenly becomes an inflation issue at the same time.
Yeah, so let's unpack that. I think the first one is the human toll, which we often ignore. Mm. But literally, you know, they're coming out saying that people are going to have to rely on blankets. Now, as we go into winter, you can't rely on blankets, especially if your insulation is not fantastic. Some of those UK homes are not as well insulated as, thankfully, the homes are here in North America. Mm-hmm. But there will be a human cost, unfortunately, and we hope not. But that is a real risk. Going over to the economic cost, I mean, already we've seen, I think the number when I had last seen is that there were five utilities, UK utilities, that have gone bust in the last month.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's only so much reshuffling you can do. Those customers are moved over to the larger companies, the Shells, the British Gas and so forth. But there's that cost. There's also the fact that if you have a look at what's happened with sterling, you know, the pound is down over 4% in a month for a developed currency, a developed market currency, that's more akin to emerging markets currencies. Yeah. Performance. So 4% in a month, technically it's looking as though, you know, it's around 135 at the moment to the US dollar. Technically 133 is your support, but if that goes, it could go all the way down to 120. So keep an eye on that. There's the fact that the yields on US on UK bonds have risen to their highest since 2019. Yes, they're still just north of 1%, but that is an increased cost of funding for the UK government. There's the real economy impact of downstream, as you indicate, fertilizer companies that may have to actually shut down shop. And I think that if we throw on top of that a logistical challenge that is a global phenomenon right now, that mm-hmm. we unfortunately don't flick a switch and solve these problems now, and that this could very well build into an inflationary story that is less than transitory. I know I've historically been in that transitory or transient inflation camp. But some of these supply chain disruptions are really building to a point where that narrative is going to have to change. And policymakers are going to have to grapple with how do you cool inflation without really destroying the economy?
And we're at the point. I mean, it sounds like a horror story that we're looking at in the future. It's sort of a slow train wreck that unless there's a very warm Northern Hemisphere winter, this is going to play out to one another degree. The extremes might not quite be there, but this is going to play out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, there's the whole aspect of what does the winter look like? That is also related to, again, the mega trend around climate change. Mm-hmm. A lot of these locations we're seeing are manifestations of that mega trend. So for the denialists out there, I would say go and have a look. It's starting to appear directly in front of your eyes. The other dimensions here, Simon, as well, is that energy markets globally are being kept tight. We saw OPEC earlier this week keeping supply tight there. So all of this feeds through. And the question mark for me is we can very quickly shift from what was historically a narrative on deflation into a narrative. I don't think it's actually inflation. I think the story here is stagflation. And the problem with stagflation, maybe a discussion mm-hmm. for another day, mm-hmm. is that there are no policy tools that we've come up with in terms of combating stagflation. For listeners not familiar, stagflation is when you have high sustained inflation, but no growth.
Yeah.
And the reason we don't have those tools, the last time the world saw this was during the energy or the oil price crisis in the 70s. And the only reason that we got out of that stagflation mess is because oil prices collapsed. That was not a policy response rather than a market response. And perhaps that's where this goes, especially if you ever look at what's happened with the parabolic curve on natural gas prices.
Yeah, and stagflation, there's a word that should keep folks awake at night. Mohammed Nala from monos.com, appreciate your time as always. How worried are you about that situation in the UK? Chatting with Mohammed, this stagflation, it's a frightening word. We're going to have that as our poll, LinkedIn and Twitter. Maybe we're in trouble, it'll be fine, or perhaps hard to tell. Have your vote and have your say.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs. no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some weekend thoughts to end this Friday. The big story this week broke yesterday was the Supreme Court of Appeal dismissing the Santam appeal against the business interruption case. Remember MyAfrica Hotels, Stellenbosch Kitchen? They won last year in, what was it, November. Santam appealed. They have lost. And it was madness. Insurance is a grudge purchase, but at least you need to know that when you claim, they will pay. Sure, you need to follow the rules, but the rules were followed. They got changed. This is a damage to Santam brand. It's damaged the industry generally, and I think was incredibly short-sighted. And the other big story, I think, is the US debt ceiling dance. So, kick down the road to the 3rd of December. But it's all just silly. This is not about fiscal discipline. This is about politicians playing games. And the real losers, the risk here, is the park rangers, librarians, who end up not getting paid. Go and Google, go dig around the trillion-dollar coin, an idea to mint a trillion-dollar coin which solves all these problems. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we were talking with Alex Dace around the strong data tech update, but also in particular, there's actually not much tech on the JSE. We asked you, where do you get your tech? 60% of you said offshore. 40% said, no, you like some JSE, but most of you, as I say, going for offshore. You can always have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.